At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Let's play the drinking clip. This is the long one. This is from court the other day. The audio's not super wonderful, but it is what it is. Let's take a look here at exactly what they... Karen's own words about the night with drinking.
The final count summoned. The final count of my alcohol intakes, probably about 5 or 6 or 4. The drinks that they were pouring me at McCarthy's, which is where I consumed most of the alcohol, was the weakest vodka tonic. It tasted just like old soda water with lime. Not that I need it to be a martini, but it might have had a splash of vodka in it. So John, I said, John, this drink tastes like it has no vodka in it. He said, just get a shot and mix it yourself. So each drink was being counted as a double. So I would get a vodka tonic, and then I would pour a shot into it. So that would come as two. Frankly, it just felt like a regular cocktail. It was just a really weak. So I asked for a shot.
She already contradicts herself in this damn thing. So it tasted like a regular cocktail, a regular weak cocktail. You mean a normal cocktail, Karen? You're not a double, just a normal, like that's what is called a cocktail. And you can get a double if you want. But I guess it works out easier in her mind if she pours the shot herself. And I'm going to guess this is something that's, you know, just the level of comfort that she has talking about this. I'm guessing this is not the first time something like this has happened where it's like, let's get an extra shot to pour in the drink.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you can tell how she speaks of alcohol. It's just pretty unusual. And for those of us who have dealt with individuals, friends, or family members that have issues with alcohol, I feel like I'm listening to same song, second verse from things I've heard from them.
Yeah. No, I mean, just somebody going on and on and on and on, trying to figure out how to explain something that should literally take about 5 seconds. I had X amount of drinks that night, but we continue with this.
So for my taste, it just tasted like that's the normal strength of what a drink should be. So I had maybe 2 or 3 that are being counted as 4 and 6. And I don't know. I felt fine. I felt like I was buzzed. And then there was one drink, the last one that was given to me, which I would have counted as 3. They're counting as my 6th cocktail. The guys that we were with bought a round of shots, and they gave me one that I didn't drink, but I poured it in my drink. So that's now my 5th and 6th drinks with the 7th, which is a shot that all the men did, and I poured it. So that one glass that I'm holding that I go into the waterfall with has 3 drinks in it, a vodka tonic and 2 shots. And which is why John said to me, you're not leaving that drink here, like you haven't touched it and just poured a bunch of vodka. He's like, just take it with you, which was something he always did.
So something he always did. I like that too.
Waterfall, and I put that drink.
Steal the glass with the drink.
So that would have been my 5th, 6th, and 7th drinks. Then John orders me a drink at the waterfall that I don't drink, that he takes with him. And then there was a round of shots that Chris Oliver bought that I did take. So that would have been the 9th. But I did not consume 9 vodka martinis or take 9 shots, depending on how you count it. And the last 2 drinks, I didn't touch.
Oh, my God.
It's
like SNL. I mean, it really feels like a bit. It does. I don't even know what to make of all that. Every time I watch it, I'm picking out something new, and I'm just like, did she just say that? It's the rationalization in all of this. And she speaks of it, and I noticed this too. She's got that big smile on her face when she's talking about all this. And it's like, look, this is probably like the catalyst of what ruined your life. And you talk about alcohol like it's some lover of yours. Like, I just did this, and it's this, and it's good to me. It's like talking about like an abusive relationship, but you love your abuser to such an insane point, and it's booze. It's just so bizarre.
It is, Tony. You know, when I first heard that clip, actually, it just makes your head spin.
Yeah.
You almost can't listen to it all because it's just, you know, her trying to rationalize.
Mm-hmm.
But Tony, you know, when you look at everything, this is just one small part of the many lies she told on social media. And they are brilliantly putting them up in piecemeal to drive home a point made by the witness in advance of the clip. I'm just, I love the order of proof they're going in.
Yeah.
And I like how they put the punch in it with her, Karen, at the end of each one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think, a very smart way of presenting this case, because you get out there, you bring your witnesses up, you got Cross, then you can accent everything with a little clip at the end that pretty much contradicts everything that the point was when the Cross goes on to the witnesses with Karen's own words. And I can't, gosh, I wonder how many of these clips, I mean, I know they all have to have seen them already, but how many they're just like, please don't show that one. Please don't show that one. And boom, there it is.
Yeah. No, it's funny. There's a funny scene in the movie Beaches. I don't know if you've ever seen it, with Bette Midler, and she's watching television, and she just did an interview, and she says, oh no, please don't say that. Oh no, you're good. You're right. She knows she said it.
Yeah.
Oh, you said it. And you just wonder how many times they're having those moments. Please don't play that one. Oh, geez.
Oh, my
and
God. Yeah.
There's nothing they can do. But I also wonder, Tony, did her, as you said, very experienced prosecution team allow this because of Sixth Amendment issues later on appeal if she's convicted?
Mm-hmm.
So you're like I said, playing the come one way, saying, okay, that she's probably going to be acquitted in their minds. And then secondarily, if she's convicted, don't worry, Karen, guess what? You're going to have this as an appealable argument. I've heard it's not appealable if both parties, in other words, if she says, no, it's fine, which she did, and I don't care about my privilege anymore, which is the whole reason these are allowed to be played.
Yeah.
Just such a huge tactical error. And you just wonder, were they trying to get to the jury pool by making this a big media stance and having just one juror feel sorry for her?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do wonder about that. I mean, you had 12 jurors on there, you know, more if you're counting the alternates. I'm going to guess one of them has a drinking problem, just sheer numbers. Just odds, or has experienced one, or as someone that's been close to them, where they might have a little sympathy for Karen in some of this. Again, it looks horrible. It clearly shows someone that, and I'm sorry to laugh about it in all reality, because seriously, that's a big problem. It can ruin lives. Obviously, it has here. But at the same point, it's been comical to watch this, because the justification is outrageous, but it doesn't show that she killed John O'Keefe. It shows she makes really bad decisions. But I'm wondering if they're kind of going to try and lean into this and go, yes, you saw these clips at the end. You saw these thoughts that she had. None of it shows that she willingly decided to kill her boyfriend. But it does show that she, you know, she doesn't make a lot of great choices. She obviously, by the time everybody watches the excuses of where she was or what happened when she let him out of the car that night, the seven different versions of it, they may go, she has no idea what happened that night, and not go, oh, I believe this version or that version, but she has no idea what occurred there. So it certainly leans more towards manslaughter, possibly, but even that, I think, can be kind of a stretch. How do you think they're going to connect all this to second-degree murder?
Well, I think how they connect it is going forward and then slamming it into reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just a big, big issue. There's no reason to reverse. You're leaving at that point. There's just no reason. And that's where you say she made a cognizant effort to throw it into reverse, to press that pedal, and to move the vehicle in his direction. And remember, in second degree, you just have to make the point, should a logical person essentially know that if they hit somebody with a car, they should die?
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's, you know, this planned out, mm-hmm. well-intentioned, which some will argue that. And does the alcohol intake mitigate that? I think it fueled it.
Yeah.
And perhaps it does mitigate it. And maybe, you know, the jury will only entertain count two.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see. I think there's just nuances with the murder too that doesn't make it seem like people understand it.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have to be intentional. You just have to understand that such an act could kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. But did she understand that at that moment? Was she even thinking that at that moment? I mean, because when I think about the throwing it into reverse, what I think about is not, you know, F him, I'm going to gun it back at him. I think they're arguing and another thing. And she throws it back because she thinks that she can. He'll hear her better, you know, that sort of a thing where somebody's walking out of the room and they come back, but she's in a vehicle, so she reversed. I don't know how you're going to prove that in her mind she was like, okay, if I reverse here really fast, I could potentially kill John. I don't think that was even in her head. I think it was just, I'm going to tell him one more thing. And then judging by the voicemails after, that seemed to be the mood that she was in. How are they going to get from there to there? Because you're really trying to prove something in someone's mind who's already, you know, three sheets to the wind or seven or nine, depending on how you do Karen drink math. I don't know that you're going to show that, because clearly she was devastated once she found out he was dead. It wasn't a, oh, shucks. I mean, that kind of seems like what it was a bit after the fact when the attention got onto her. But that day, you know, she ended up being in a psych ward.
Yeah, no, that's true. But when you look at her backing up, as I said, mm-hmm. it's an intentional action.
Yeah.
And I get your point. Did she intentionally just go back and maybe want to open her window and scream at him some more? But those voice messages,
yeah.
her words are not at all slurred.
No, they're not. That's a good
she's
point.
She's able to drive. We're not getting any information. Ian Whiffen, I was just listening to him describe the entire journey from the bar to the house based on the cell mm-hmm. information, which is so reliable. And I bet it's going to match up for the most part with the vehicle data, mm-hmm. right? It might be off a minute or a few seconds, but it's going to be pretty reliable.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about her swerving. You know, I was listening to it. In other words, that cell phone is going in a direct direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see if that vehicle data matches up. Again, high tolerance, able to drive, not slurring her words, cognizantly available during mm-hmm. that time. And if you look also at her very specific recollections, oh, I was listening to, what was it, YouTube?
I thought YouTube at first, but I think she was saying U2, the band. That's what I got the side. I'm like, why would she be listening to YouTube? Oh, U2. Okay. So with or without you, she's jamming. without you. And one more thing, John.
Oh my gosh, you picked that song. That's so funny.
Oh.
Which is a good song. But nevertheless, she remembers all these details, although I will say, it depends on which version. I've heard about six versions now, and they're all different.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. She was a doting mother, the kind who baked cookies, made the best homemade Halloween costumes, and never missed a PTA meeting. The perfect mom. Until the police found something buried in the backyard. A secret she kept for years. A secret she thought would never come to light. The neighbors gasped. Not her. She's so nice. But people forget. Monsters don't always look like monsters. Some wear aprons. Some tuck their kids in at night. And some hide their darkest deeds in places they think no one will ever look. If only someone had heard the warning signs, had recognized the patterns from an eerily similar case on Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened ad-free before anyone else and saved themselves from baking cookies with a serial killer. Instead, well, they won't be RSVP to this year's PTA meeting. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts